Shalom everyone, and today we're studying Parashat Shoftim. It's in the book of Deuteronomy, Dvarim, chapter 16, verse 18. And it starts with the words Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha bechol she'arecha. Judges and policemen you should have in all of your gates. Asher Adonai Eloecha noten lecha, that God, your Lord, is giving you, lishvatecha. This is to mention that usually the gates of the cities where the major place, because everybody goes through the gates, and this is where also court was sitting, because it was accessible to everyone coming and going into every settlement. And they will judge the nation. And then the word mishpat, mishpat is judgment, but the mishpat is a court case, tzedek, of justice. Okay, so we have to understand that we are in a very, very perplexing era. A lot of people feel nowadays very, very mixed up. Just because we entered a few years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, an era that is very perplexing, very annoying, very unsettling, very challenging, and we must be focused in order to be able to deal with the huge bombardment of information surrounding us and staying sane in all of this, what's happening to us. The words over here are Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha. Judges and policemen you should have in all your gates. Which means, first of all, this is one of the seven Noahide laws that every human being must be committed to in order to have his or her tikkun established or achieved. And that means that every society is totally responsible to have a system with judges and policemen that will make sure that the law of do not steal, do not kill, and so on, some laws of order must be enforced in every society. But you know, what does that mean? It means that there's no total freedom because there are laws. So what if you say, I stole from that rich person who is a thief, and because I stole from him, I'm exempt, and court should dismiss me because I stole from a big corporation is also cheating and using slave labor. You know, we have to understand that it is very important in the Torah of respecting the authorities. Why? Because the Talmud says very clearly, if there's no government, people will basically swallow up each other alive. Why? Because the moment society, we know what happens to society when you remove the government, it's becoming horrible. And in our case, we can see the signs for the falling apart of governments all over the world, because I spoke about it many times, Professor Daniel Kahneman of blessed memory, just passed away a few months. He raised this issue years ago through scientific research. He's a Nobel Prize winner in economy, that you go to court in a democratic society, and they checked out if you come with the same case, the same criminal offense to 15 different judges with the same case, you're going to get 15 different, so different, very significantly different verdicts. And the moment you have something like this, society is in danger. Why? Because the moment you can't expect anymore what the judge is going to say, because the judge has his own political views and he judges not according to the law, but according to his political views. How? Let me explain. Verse 19 explains that. Lo tateh mishpat, lo takir panim, ve lo tikach shochad. Do not divert the court case. Do not give some what's the word? You should judge people equally. You should not take bribery, because the bribery, ki ashochad yaver enei chachamim yisalef divrei tzadikim, because bribery will make the wise people blind, and the bribery also will turn the words of the righteous into nothing. What does that mean? We see that some judges, very well that this judge will give the verdict in favor of the rich ones and the strong ones. Okay, another judge will, if you know the judge very well, the judge will always prefer the weak ones and the ones who are less fortunate in society. Both, the Torah says, both are terrible, because the moment you have already an inclination, you cannot be a judge. Because at that moment, that instead of bringing to the world justice, you already have preparations. You prefer one side in front of the other just because you have a liking to them or you hate them. We know that once upon a time, when judges used to simply disqualify themselves because they felt they prefer one side on the other, and that's why they cannot be judges in that case. Today it's becoming more and more rare, and that it doesn't matter what the case is. What matters is who is the judge. The moment the government works this way and there's no justice, we are in a grave danger of people taking the law into their hands, and the result will be a slow death of society. And that why? Because the moment people do not trust the institutions of society anymore, this is the end. Now, Rabbi Ashlag, the founder of modern Kabbalah movement, is teaching us that basically every human society have an expiration date. And if you study modern history, the greatest historians today, they have the same idea. And what we are learning, that our society that was based on certain rules, establishments, and recognition of society that was established after World War II. And right now, this society that we are part of is falling apart. And Rabbi Ashlag is saying, every society, that the moment you establish it, in the beginning, it's usually useful and functional relatively to the previous society. However, remember that we are part of a tikkun process. Tikkun process means that every situation has a goal, and the goal is to sort out, Beru it's called, to sort out the holiness from the darkness, the sparks of light out of impurity. And as that process continues, finally, that society has to expire because that societal structure has expired and it's not useful anymore because the people that belong to that society achieved a certain goal. And now we need to destroy that society and rebuild it upon new laws that will be more just, more functional, and more refined. History shows it again and again. And we can see that even the most, let's say, functional regimes and societies in the ancient world would not be able to withstand some basic ideas of morals today. You know, we go to Athens during the time of the great philosophers of Athens, when Athens was the first democracy. Athens at that time was made of few hundred landowners, business people, and few thousand slaves. Okay? That cannot withstand any rules, values that we believe in today. Yet, Athens laid some rules for democracy, for ideas, and many, many great ideas of justice and so on. The United States of America was established in 1776. Okay? It was a democracy. That's how everybody teaches us at school. How could it be a democracy when this democracy is based on millions of slaves? So it's not a democracy. Not today, but then it was a democracy and a beacon of light for the whole world of more and more nations trying and aspiring towards a more democratic, free kind of a government. So we have to understand in the same way that if we look at the United States at 1776 and maybe France at 1789, there was a French Revolution, and they sent to the guillotine the most corrupted people that ruled France. Okay, but within very few years it became a bloodshed. Okay, that's how they call history calls that era, the bloodshed. And people were so suspicious at each other taking the power, and power corrupts. And democracy took France centuries to really establish a functioning democracy. Okay, so we yet. The French Revolution became an amazing sign that people can rebel against their oppressors, although they are their own nation, and finally take their destiny in their own hands. So we have to understand that our perception of justice is very, very relative, and what was right 80 years ago cannot be right today. And society, through pain and through a lot of sorting of good and evil, holiness and unholiness, will have to go through the next painful few years till we sort out about what kind of a society we want to be part of. And this is the debate that we need to raise, because yes, we cannot agree to injustice. We cannot agree to exploitation. We cannot agree to deliberate subjugation of the masses by people who are privileged. These are great ideas. We have to remember when we are talking about what we read in the Torah, this is more than 3,000 years ago. Okay? This is revolutionary in those terms of those days. Those days, we did not have citizens. We had serfs. We had subjects. We had slavery system. Most of the people in the world were slaves in the terms of our society, relatively. And what we think is freedom will be found out within a few decades only that we were basically slaves and we had no idea even that we are enslaved. So we have to remember that waking up is very, very painful, very painful. And we are waking up slowly. We had, just to remind everybody, we just not long ago, we had this great crisis called the Corona. And that crisis got a lot of us to realize that we don't live the life that we really want to live. And we realize that we are surrounded with a lot of misinformation. And it's almost impossible to tell the difference between what is right and wrong. So how do we know what is right? And we learned last week, Parashat Re'eh, that the ability to see the path that carries the blessing and to favor that over the path that carries the curse, this is not coming for free. You need to work really hard on your inner spiritual journey and intensity in order to achieve a level of awareness that is O-based, O-W-A-A-W-E, O-based. When a person is in awe of the greatness of the universe, when a person is in awe of the presence of God that he kind of achieved through hard labor and a lot of meditation, prayer, study, and contemplation, then he will have, as we learned, re'eh means to see, but it's also the same shoresh, the same root of awe, which means when is that we see? How come people during the times of Athens and its great philosophers didn't see that they live in lie because they basically live off the slavery work of people that basically have no freedom whatsoever. And you just simply exploit them in a way that today, in today terms, it's outrageous. Okay? Not just this, your kids, even if you've been a privileged Greek in Athens or in Sparta, if your children were kind of hard to learn or not healthy enough, it was very common for a Greek person to kill his or her own child. This is unaccepted today. For them, that was the moment, the first thing when the Greeks meet Jews and they write down that they're very weird kind of people. They don't kill the sick babies. Okay, so we have to understand that we do not see. We are blind. We can see only what our cultural upbringing condition us to see as right and wrong. This is changing just in front of our eyes right now. It is a painful transformation, It's the first time the transformation includes the most of humanity. The problem is the most of humanity is very, very much behind in the spiritual journey of humanity. The best ones already completed their journey and they're waiting for us somewhere above, watching us, trying to push us. But most of us are very unaware spiritually, and therefore it's even more painful. So when we are talking about, oh, let's today, it's more, there's no talking, there's arguments. When we are emotionally, very deeply emotionally involved in a political strife, in a political argument, we have to remember few things. One, the first one, we have very, very limited access to the information of what's really happening. Okay? It will take sometimes years, sometimes never, till we really know what really happened behind the scenes. So when you are exposed to only a very partial information, how could you be so sure about your political attitude about who's right, who's wrong, who's cheating you, who's not? That's first. The second thing is that remember the Shoftim v'Shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha, Rabbi Chaim Vital is saying you have to look at it also from the point of what's in it for me? It's like, okay, I'm not right now in power to make sure that we have the best judges and the best policemen. Okay, what's in it for me? And Rabbi Chaim Vital says, first of all, you have to realize that you have to look at it also as another angle that when we are talking about your gates, it's your eyes, your ears, okay, the gates of your mind. And you should put judges and policemen in order to make sure that the information that is coming in is sorted out properly. Because if you don't do that, you'll be brainwashed very easily by all kinds of people who are not really favoring your interests, but they're trying to play with your mind. And mind games and playing with our minds. Remember, we live in an era in which we are exposed to materials that subconsciously are purposely, with very high level of mathematic algorithm, we are being exposed to information that is purposely designed to divert our consciousness towards a certain way of thinking. So it is very much recommended if you really want to be an independent human being, not to watch TV, news, and stuff like this. You have to have a very diverse sources of information about what's going on. You should be, I will never read an article in a newspaper, in a paper. I will read only an article in a newspaper if it's published online and I can read the talkbacks and I can see some argument about it, because otherwise I will never know what's the agenda of the person who published the article. And if that media does not allow free conversation about the topics of the article, I'm not going to consume this information because for sure somebody is playing with my mind. So what's left? As we said last week, if we are not going to work intensively on our spiritual awareness, creating an awe of God, His creation, and the rules of the creation, of course that I cannot trust.
No,
Oh.
God.
Of course, that I cannot trust whatsoever any kind of judgment of my own. And of course, of other people. Because as I said before, the moment somebody is bringing up their opinion, and that person has no access to most of the information available, so this opinion worth nothing. It's just a diversion. So be very careful about it. Yes, we have to be aware that we all want a just society that we can trust the government and all the different arms of government. However, as long as we live in a society that the awe of God is not at the top of its values, we understand that the people that will reach the seat of a judge, policeman, or the government, it's all about the great race for power, and power corrupts. And the more power, more corruption. So, of course, the moment you live in a society that the value of awe of God is not appreciated, we have a big problem. We are in a huge problem. And therefore, we will have to go through a lot of trials and tribulations, a lot of pain, till we start to develop a higher awareness that is based on faith, not blind faith. Faith that is based on very hard work. And that is what Parashat Shoftim is about. Parashat Shoftim is about how do you create that kind of faith. And why is it right now? Because Parashat Shoftim is always being read in the beginning of the month of Elul, the Hebrew calendar month of Virgo. And we know that Virgo is about judgment. It's about, on one hand, trying to find perfection. And if it is the wrong aspect, which means there's no awe, trying to find perfection in others, and of course, you'll never find perfect people. So you become very egotistical because you think that you're better than others, because it's very easy for you to see what's wrong with others. This month is considered in the Jewish calendar a very holy month, because this month is the month that precedes the new year. And that means that always, the Creator will give us the remedy before we have the plague. And what is the plague? We learn, the Zohar is teaching us, that on the first day of the Hebrew New Year, the first day, the new moon, of the month of Libra, the scales, the good deeds and the bad deeds, the positive and the negative. And we have to remember that basically on that day, a new light is being projected into the soul of every living human being. And that light is the light that is supposed to sustain us, every member of humanity, for the next coming year. The point is like this. We learned last week, Parashat Re'eh, where it says, you should see where the blessing is and where the curse is. And God is giving the blessing and the curse. And we learned last week what Rabbi Chaim Ben Atah, or Chaim HaKadosh, is teaching us. Of course, you just go all along the teachings of the books of the Tanakh, the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, and the Mishnah, and the Talmud, and the Zohar. And there's a problem, because how could God, who is only good, only the source of life, and whatever is good, how could God cast a curse over anyone? Impossible, unacceptable. So we understand according to that when we are talking about that the curse is something that is generated by the end user, by the person who receives the blessing. And we know power, let's say when you have a car, that's you're holding the wheel and you're holding power because the engine of the car is very, very powerful. It can send you on the highway on a speed of more than 100 kilometers an hour, and that's very, very powerful. However, if you're not conscious of that power, and let's say you're drunk, you turn your car into a killing machine, and you turn yourself into a murderer. Not because there's fault in the car, the fault is in the driver. The same way, weapons do not kill. People holding weapons, they are the ones who kill. Okay? Weapons can defend, weapons can kill. That depends on who's holding to the weapon. Electricity is a blessing, but the end user can determine electricity as a curse if he does not obey the rules of how to use high voltage electricity. So the same thing, there is the network of the tree of life that every human being must be connected to it in order to live. That network feeds every human being, even the ones that hate God with vengeance. But what's the problem? The problem is that how we use the bliss of God as a blessing or as a curse, that depends on us. And what is the main value that we have to understand over here? So the Zohar is saying, and let's go to the Zohar. And the Zohar says very clearly that our job, we read verse 1 in the Zohar of Parashat Shoftim. Shoftim ve'shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha. בפיקודה דה מני שופטים ושוטרים. ועוד כי אלוהים שופט. כי מם מיני יו דחושבני כף. בתרח האלוהים שופט זה ישפיל היי וזה ירים דה וב. He's speaking over here, the Zohar is speaking over here, about the scales of justice. And he's speaking, the Zohar is speaking about the metaphysical idea of the judge. And by the way, in Hebrew, the word for judge that is being used over here is shofet and not dayan. Judge in Hebrew is dayan. Shofet has a different meaning according to what the Zohar is saying. Shofet means the balancer, which means what is the job of the judge, according to the Torah, the judge should be a healer. Which means sometimes you, if you've been to court, you see that the judge is not trying to take revenge. The judge is trying to bring all sides to a place of healing, forgiveness, and somehow balance, to balance between the hurt and what is acceptable, what is doable, and not to get the emotions of revenge fan out, but to bring into what is called balance. So whoever was hurt will get as much as possible, that is practical. Whoever was hurt will also reach kind of understanding that that's the best that can be done. And there's no point for more vengeance. And whoever hurt will learn his lesson and transform so this won't happen again. This is a shofet, a healer. While if the judge is trying over here to take revenge or to change the course of history by giving more power to the weak ones, and weakening the strong ones, on the contrary, giving more power to the strong ones, and making the weak ones even more weak and vulnerable, this is not the job of the Shofet. It's not healing. It's horrible. Okay? Because now it's not that you're, it's not just that the judge is not balanced, is now creating more imbalance that basically will hurt the whole of society. So what the Zohar is saying over here, the purpose of the judge is to create balance. Because why do the different parties came in front of judge, the judge in court? Because people went off balance in their tikkun process. And the judge should be the one who's looking for how do we balance the soul's journey of the people who came in front of him. Because the victim was hurt. Why was he hurt? Why was the victim a victim in this case? And how can we heal the victim from his place of being victimhood, in his victimhood? And the one who was the culprit, why did he get out of balance? And we have to remember that the great title of God, one of the greatest titles of God in the Jewish resources, is HaMezaveg Zivugim, the matchmaker, which means God is matching between the victim and the villain in a place in which they two have to face each other, challenge each other, and through that interaction, they should reach a kind of a catharsis, transformation, learning in which they don't have to get into this trouble all over again, because more than probable, it's not the first time they are involved in any kind of injustice. Usually, the mistake comes back again and again till we do it right. So we'll continue to verse 2 because that's what I wanted to get into. פיקודה בתרדה לדון בסייף, לדון בחנק, לדון בדין סקילה, לדון בדין שריפה, לדון בסייף למען לסמך מם. הדר עוד הכתיב כי רבתה בשמיים חרבי הנה על אדום תרד. The next mitzvah is to judge with a sword, with suffocation, with stoning, and with fire. There are four ways the Torah is giving for court to execute somebody who was found that he's into death sentence. Okay? What's important for us? Because court today, according to the Jewish rule, since we do not have the high court in Jerusalem in the temple, no court on earth has the power to judge people to death. So why do I need to learn that? And the answer is that it says to judge with a sword, with suffocation, with stoning, and with burning fire is basically judging the dark angel. Where's the dark angel? Oh, far away in the dark mountains. No, the dark angel is within each one of us. And whoever does not realize that, he's in a very dire situation in which not understanding the name of the game is you're not part of the game yet.
Oh.
So, verse 3 is telling us the following. Hacherev shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's sword, the sword of God is made of the letter Yud of the Tetragrammaton. This is the handle. You know, if you have a really nice, good imagination. Vav shel Havaya hu guf HaCherev, the letter Vav of the Tetragrammaton, that's the long body of the sword. Hey, hey, shel Havaya, the two letters Hey of the Tetragrammaton, hen bet fiyot של החרב. These are the two edges, sharp edges of the sword. And that's why it says, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Why twice justice? Because there are two judges, judgments. There is a judgment from the mouth, Mipi Beidin Shel Mala, the judgment of the Supreme Court up in heaven. Vedim Mipi Beidin Shel Mata, and there's a judgment from the physical court down below. But it's more than that. What the Zohar is saying, why is the Yud Kei Vav Kei? And he's saying, we have to understand that why would somebody be a victim or somebody being the culprit or the villain, the robber, the thief? It's because each one of them went off balance. Otherwise, why would that happen to us? And the moment we are of course of balance, then we fall into a mishap that we are out of balance. And that's why we need to come in front of the judge. And the judge is supposed to rebalance the case. So why are we off balance? Because we allowed the dark angel to take over. How do we know? We know that because if we look deep inside, well, I'm going to really basic Kabbalah for beginners, level one. And we learn over there that when we face any kind of a situation, the first thing we should do is look inwardly and try to analyze the immediate reaction. And if the reaction is shame, blame, anger, all kinds of what the three Fs symbolize, fight, flight, freeze, low level emotional reaction that are also very, very low frequency, which means you can find them among animals, we have to understand immediately that the real culprit behind the story is our own reaction, which means that angel of darkness that took over us, either by surprise, either by slow conquest without us realizing, the moment I react with a fight, flight, freeze mechanism, which could be translated into anger, vengeance, hatred. We know very well today that those emotions are very weakening emotions. So maybe you're right, but you're dead right. This is very dangerous because, yes, I could be right, but what happens to my logic when I'm angry, when I feel humiliated, when I feel enslaved, when I feel like a victim? What happens to my ability to take command over my life and become the winner I was created to become? Of course, that's a setback. Because the moment I blame and I'm not taking full responsibility for what's happening to me, maybe I'm right logically, but I transgress the second rule on the two tablets, which means thou should have no other gods but me. And that moment that I blame another human being, or I blame a shortcoming in me, or I blame the government, or I blame the global warming, it doesn't matter. The moment I find myself in a place of hot, burning blame, could be also cold, freezing blame, in that moment, I allowed the dark side to take over me, my thoughts, my logic, my path. And that means that it's leading me towards a harder and harder situation till I say, enough is enough. I want to be free. But I'm not free when I allow that emotion to take over. So I need to kill the angel of darkness with the sword of God, which means when I can stop the reaction and reconnect to the source of light, love, life, the tree of life, by realizing that we know that Resh Aleph Hey, last week's parasha, is also one of the 72 names of God. Resh Aleph Hey means is a word, it's a verb that means also in Hebrew see. And to see what? When I can transform my state of mind of victimhood, hatred, anger, vengeance, revenge, whatever. And I can turn it into looking at it from the point of view of the Creator Himself. I can visualize the Tetragrammaton. I can visualize the light of the Creator. I can imagine the intense, endless love He has for me and for every living creature. And I'm not angry anymore. I basically created a return, teshuva. I returned the connection to the source of life for my soul. I'm reconnected to the tree of life. This is the most powerful sword against my enemies. When I connect to that light, and I'm not motivated by vengeance, hatred, humiliation, all kinds of dark emotions, I can free myself. And then I can connect to endless sources of wisdom and light because I returned my connection to the tree of life. Only then I can trust my decision. But at that moment, I am not hateful anymore. I'm not angry anymore. I'm not upset anymore. I'm relaxed. I can figure out from a very balanced place what is the best thing to do. And it's usually out of the box. However, as long as I'm still obsessed, occupied, controlled by the lower emotions, I am still in the same old thing. I'm right, but I'm dead right. And that's why exactly what the Zohar is saying when we are talking about the four different ways of killing, of court, we are talking about four different ways. We should learn how to kill our negativity, our evil inclination, our own inner dark angel, because without that, without the commitment, without the awareness, without the inner contemplation, we are not even starting to win the war. And of course, I cannot be a judge in court, in civil court, because the moment I hear the case and I feel victimized like the victim, I feel hatred of the victim, I feel the need to revenge, I cannot be a judge in a court like this. Can we force success upon someone? No. Can we force a victim to turn into a winner? No. It's a decision that each person must make. We have to go through a lot of trials and tribulations, through pain and misery, that sometimes they look unbearable for reaching that precious moment that there's only one place to go, returning to the tree of life, returning to the endless light of God, to the endless love of God that never changes. No matter what will I do, it's just waiting for me to return to it. And that force cannot force itself upon us because remember, every human being was created in the image of God. Every human being has a godly spark of light as a soul. And because we have that structure of creator within us, we cannot allow anything, anyone to make it for us. So we need to make it ourselves. So the moment I find my reaction debilitating, humiliating, upsetting, freezing, boiling, whatever, basically going out of control, I have to really understand I am incapable to see what's really happening around me. So yes, that as long as what's happening around me is upsetting, debilitating, whatever other horrible names we can give it, I have to understand that I'm not capable of realizing what really happened over here because I cannot see. So the whole month of the month of Elul, Virgo, that we are starting tomorrow night, the whole month is about having the ability, because there's an opening in the universe, to allow all of us to be more pure, more sensitive in a positive way, more aware to the different options we are facing, more aware to the challenges and the definition of the challenges, and more capable of connecting to the presence of the tree of life and the awe of God into our lives. And therefore, this is a time for the next coming month to have much more contemplation, much more prayers, meditation of repentance. What does it mean repentance? Returning. Because the universe right now is open. It's much easier. It's much easier. Things that we maybe worked really hard about in the last 2 months, this month, it will be easier to achieve. Because there's a cosmic readiness. Virgo is a symbol, the Zohar says, of Betuel, Bito shel El, God's daughter. What's God's daughter? The Shekhinah, the divine presence. So it's easier to tap into that state of mind. However, we have to relinquish any connection we have with the reactive way of thinking and being emotional, which basically the common media is trying to steer as much as very low hard feelings towards the governments, towards whatever, towards each other, groups against each other, towards the bad guys, and so on. If the moment you realize that you have a very strong sense of righteousness, but that sense of righteousness is making you not nice towards other people. And your tolerance towards other people is going down and you become more judgmental. You are not in the right direction. You're not connecting to the awe of God. You are basically a victim of the dark side. And therefore, we understand if we go in the history of the previous era, the 8 years that preceded World War II, and we realize how through the creativity of mass media, was the newspapers and then radio that time, people, it was very easy to realize that arousing fear, the most primitive emotion, fear and anxiety, is the easiest way to win elections, simply by terrorizing whole nations. And that's how we see how Nazism came into power, how communism came into power. Was what we call today populism that is based on arousing fear. And we know fear, historians are teaching us that fear is the most powerful force in history. So the moment you create a lot of fear, oh, of course, there are different movements that get the hands up because they are the populist movement in that really touch the most fearsome part in the person. So when you look at today's, oh, it's not today's like it's, but today it's much more accelerated. The different parties going to elections, they're trying, what they're trying to do is to create the most hatred against the other side. So people don't vote because you are so great. You just have to say the great slogans. You know, I love the people. I care for the people. It's all for the people. Everybody says it. Nobody says I'm against the people. I'm going to rob them. Nobody's going to say the truth. Okay? But what they really focus is how do we demonize the other side? So the moment you feel that, somebody is trying to demonize and somebody start trying to awaken in you, deep inside, fear, anger, hatred, you have to understand somebody is trying to manipulate you to become their subjects. Because as we know, fear and anxiety are the most powerful political forces. So the question is not who is the most promising leader, but who is the most scary leader? So the moment you, it doesn't matter what are the qualities of the person you're voting for. What really matters is how much do you hate or afraid of the person that you're voting against. But this is not only into elections. We have elections in Hebrew, bechirot. Bechirot means free will. Free will we have few times a day. And few times a day we have to make a choice. Do we allow the most primitive emotions to rule us, push us, manipulate us? Or are we standing there, stopping the emotion, stopping the reaction, and praying for a higher level of awareness in which we can feel the awesome presence of the Creator? And then, and only then, I can make a choice what to say, what to do, what to decide. This is what humanity has to realize. The moment somebody is trying to poison your mind with hatred, we know that the hatred of the 20th century was responsible for hundreds of millions of victims. And a lot of people really meant well, murdered massively other people just for a better cause. This is doesn't work this way. Doesn't work this way. Does that mean that if somebody comes to kill me, I have to let him kill me? No, the Torah says very clearly, Haba lo yecha, Ashkem lo go. Somebody who comes to kill you, it's only the very logical idea is to kill him before, first before he kills you. Why? That's because. But if you being manipulated, you start to feel like a victim, you start to feel like hatred, and you start to feel blame and shame. And how come I want to kill somebody who wants to kill me? No, I should really hug that person, and so on. It doesn't work most of the times. So again, what if people ask me, what should leaders do? I'm not a leader. I don't have the access to the information. Leaders should be working hard about their awareness, their awe of God. This is written over here very clearly. When we are talking in Parashat Shoftim, chapter 17, verse 15. Som tasim alecha melech. You should put a king over you. Okay. So, but is that all? Rak lo yerbe lo susim velo yashiv et ha'am Mitzrayim al manarbot sus. But the king should not have too many horses, because that's, it was and is still a sign of vanity. Lo yerbe lo nashim should have, he should not have too many women. Should not be busy collecting silver and gold. That's verse 17. Verse 18, והיה כשבתו על כיסא ממלכתו וכתב לו את משנה התורה הזאת. And when he becomes a king and he sits on his throne, he should write for himself this book of Deuteronomy. והייתה עמו וקרא בו כל ימי חייו. He should have it and he should read it all the days of his life. למען ילמד ליראה את ה' אלוהיו, so he will learn to have awe. Levitirum levavom echav, so his heart would not rise higher above his brothers. And so he would not go astray from these mitzvot, not to the right and not to the left. So he will reign for long days over his kingdom, him and his sons in the midst of Israel. So what the Torah is saying over here, again, awe. A king without awe is dangerous. A ruler without awe is dangerous. A ruler that not just that he does not believe in God, he believes in all kinds of ideologies that aren't going against the Torah is dangerous. Okay? But is that all? No. There's something else that is raised over here. Again, it speaks about having prophets that will guide us. But if the prophet will tell us something that is not written in the Torah, he's a false prophet, because you cannot change the Torah. Same way as we said before, you cannot change the laws of Newton. You cannot change the laws of Einstein. You can find laws of different dimensions, but you cannot change those laws. And there's another thing. It says also the rules of court, it's like no circumstantial evidences in order to execute somebody. No. No, you can't. You cannot execute somebody because of circumstantial evidences. Then we have chapter 20, just preparing us for the month of Elul. Ki tetzel hamilchama loivecha, when you rage a war against your enemy, veraita sus varechev am ravimecha, and you will see a horse and vehicles. But it says a horse and a vehicle. A nation bigger than you are. Lo tira mehem. Do not fear them. Ki Adonai Elohecha imach amalcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, because God, your Lord, is with you. So yes, That's in a simple way, this is an instruction for the Israelites. When you go to war against your enemy, do not have fear. You're not supposed to have fear. And because that's also explained in the next verse. ואמר עליהם שמע ישראל אתם קרבים היום למלחמה לאויביכם. And the Kohen will tell the people, listen, O Israel, you're going into war against your enemies. Do not let your heart weaken. Do not be fearful of that. Do not run into conclusions. Do not fear them. God is with you. However, whoever is afraid, verse 8, whoever is afraid and is a soft heart, this is a war. Go home. Do not disturb the ones who want to fight. Do not convince the ones of fighting they should be afraid. Go home. Just leave us alone and let us fight. However, we learn also why in the beginning it says you wage a war against your enemy and you see a horse and a vehicle and a chariot. Okay? And Or HaChaim HaKadosh Rabbi Chaim Elatar is saying, no, it's meaning about the war for a person against his evil inclination. You wage a war against your enemy. Who is your enemy? The evil inclination. Don't be afraid. Because if you see that your enemy is big as a horse and he's a chariot, what does it mean a chariot? He's sitting. It's not that you have only a dark angel fighting you, your evil inclination. He's also a chariot. Sharet is also combined with your body. What's Amrav Mimecha? What's a nation bigger than you? It's a whole host of evil inclinations inside us that we have to fight. We have a whole month, 2 months. We have the month of Elul and the month of Tishrei, most of it, to fight the enemy, the real true enemy. The enemy is not the person in front of me. The enemy is, first of all, be within. So if you should not be, says the Rabbi Chaim Ben Attar, do not be afraid. God is with you. You have to understand that God is with you and don't go to war without God. You go to war against your enemy. Your evil inclination without God, there's no way. Whoever thinks he can overcome human evil just with logic, said it many, many times, it's impossible. Of course, the great philosophers of the 18th century, they said we can create a new era of heaven on earth with human logic. We don't need God. Why? The messengers of God abused humanity for the whole dark ages and after. Look, why did France become the first nation to separate church and state? Because the abusiveness of the French Catholic Church was beyond means. Okay? They were beyond. And that's why they can't even stand the idea with justice that the church will be involved with the state. Still, does that mean that those people who claim to represent God and they were so, so corrupt, that means that God is corrupt? That means that the Torah is corrupt? They corrupted the Torah also. What do you want from the Torah? They didn't allow even to study the Torah, so people will learn for themselves what's right. So we have to realize that we have an amazing journey in the coming month and 3 weeks, a little bit more. And there's so many principles in this parasha that I have no time to repeat. The last one is chapter 21, which speaks about finding a dead body and measuring which town is the closest to that dead body. And then the judges of that town should take responsibility. What's behind it? And then how they do that, they chop off the head of a young female calf, young heifer, in the river, and say it's not our hands. That what's the story of here? The Zohar is explaining it's all about the secret of the shofar blowing on Rosh Hashanah, that basically we need to learn through this time till Rosh Hashanah how to remove the power of selfishness from ourselves in order to be able to reach a better year and to reach a better judgment about our own actions and thoughts. And then we can find solace in finding the right direction we should take in everything in our lives, and especially nowadays, that Noah's Ark, the Zohar is saying, is the study of the Zohar and achieving awe of God and doing the best we can without excuses to align ourselves with the tree of life. When we do that, and only when we do that, we'll be immune to the terrible stuff that is happening around, because when people are so hateful, so that when people are so much afraid, they're hateful, they're angry, they're very, very dangerous. So the Zohar is giving us a promise. Whoever is going to be connected to the Zohar, to the tree of life through the study of the Zohar, to real trust and faith and awe, will be able to thrive like never before in this era. But the moment we're busy weakening ourselves with being angry about the whole world, about the other side politically, and we are feeling so much right, and we have such a religious rightfulness of hatred of the other political rival, we're not there. We're not. This is not how the tree of life feels like. This is false prophecy. Very hard times are awaiting us. We have to embrace ourselves and to really connect to those teachings so we can get the best out of it and become inspiration for people that simply are so far away that you can't even explain to them what does it mean to connect to something so pure, so loving, so full of light as the tree of life and as the real true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which basically is the refuge for all of us. Thank you, and be careful. Good luck.